Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participant lines are in a listen-only mode. After today's presentation, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions, and if you would like to ask one over the phone, you may press star then one at that time. Today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections to this, please disconnect now. I would like to turn the call over to your host for today, Ms. Jan Kuny. Miss, you may begin.
Hi, I'm Jan Kuny. I'm Program Officer at the National talk about one of our new graduate STEM education, rolling computing in undergraduate education. I use Q for short. It's officially NSF 19536, and it's a joint solicitation from the Education and Human Resources Directorate and the Computer and Information Science and Engineering Directorate. We're particularly lucky today at our webinar to have the Assistant Director for SIES, that's the Computer and Information Science and Engineering Directorate, here today to open the discussion. So let me turn this over to Jim Caruso.
So thanks, Jen. Hi, everybody. Jen and Allison and I are just, we're so excited to be here for this webinar on Q. This has been a long time coming, and we really think that this is going to be a really important solicitation for the community. So as all of you folks out there know, in some ways our classes have been bursting in the seams, right? So certainly we're seeing a huge number of students who are coming into classes who really want to do the traditional computer science major. But really increasingly, we're also seeing other students now coming into our courses who want to really look at the application of computing in different domains, to think of computing as a way to creatively do what they want to do within a different discipline, whether it's something disciplinary specific, maybe tackling a challenge problem or something along those lines. And so we're seeing an increasing diversity of students in a lot of different dimensions. We'll come back to that in our classes. And Q is really all about reimagining, rethinking the role of computing in undergraduate education, to think about restructuring curriculum, to think about new programs and new pathways. For some of you, you may be on this road already. Jan and I and others have written about X plus CS or CS plus X, where, again, this notion of applying computing in other disciplines or to grand challenge problems. That's where the X actually comes from. So I think this this program grew out of that and grew out of those nascent activities that are happening already, I think, around campuses around the country. But it aims to be more than that, right? We're not looking at just minor changes around the corners, but really thinking about re-envisioning the undergraduate computing curriculum. So yes, we're going to always need to be working with our sort of more traditional majors, but now increasingly we have this other class of students who our current major probably doesn't quite serve just right. So we're thinking about rethinking curriculum, rethinking pathways for these new kinds of students. This isn't going to be achieved overnight, and it's also not going to be achieved in isolation. So there are a couple of things that we think are going to be sort of special about Q, about this particular solicitation in particular. One is about networked improvement communities, NICs, otherwise known as NICs. I want to say a couple words about that, a couple words about BPC, and then a couple words about ethics. Those three things we think are a little bit special on top of this already being a pretty special solicitation. Then I'm going to turn things over to Jan. So what is a networked improvement community? Some of you may have heard of this. The Carnegie Foundation has been writing about this for a while. But the idea is we're not looking for just individual change, right? We want change at scale, and that's going to happen. That will happen better when folks are collaborating with each other. So these network improvement communities are groups of like-minded institutions with similar goals who want to get together, who want to work on this together, can learn from each other, can understand dimensions of the problem that they might not have seen, particularly on their individual campus. So you'll see a very strong notion of working together in these NICs and these network information improvement communities. Another part of the solicitation that Jan will be talking about is broadening participation in computing. And here, I think one of the things that I think is going to be really special about the students who are coming up from high schools into these new pathways and these new curricular frameworks that we're going to be working on as part of Q is that it's going to be a much more diverse set of students coming in. We're already We're already seeing that as for students who are taking the new AP exam, computer science principles, for example. So those students are coming in. We're having a broader, we're having a wider as well as a broader in diversity pipeline of students coming in. And we want to make sure that those students are really well served by what happens here. And so BPC, Broadening Participation in Computing, is going to be another key component. And then finally, just a word about ethics. Increasingly, computing systems are being used throughout society, impacting people in almost every aspect of their daily lives. And I think we all believe that ethics and understanding the societal, social side of the computing that we do is going to be very important. So when you take a look at the solicitation, you'll see that ethics are also an important part of that. So in addition to this broad idea of rethinking the undergraduate education, restructuring curriculum and pathways and programs, be thinking again about these network improvement communities, about BPC, and about ethics. So maybe with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jan.
Okay, great, Jim, thanks. So there are lots of reasons for this solicitation, as Jim has already pointed out. We acknowledge some of that from the National Academies Report in 2017, where they said it's time for institutions to consider their missions and the constituencies they serve, and to determine what role computing should play in the experience, knowledge, and skills of its graduates 2025 and beyond. So with that in mind, let me show you just some of the, what Jim mentioned, that there was a difference in the landscape of undergraduate CS education. There's been a big surge in undergraduate enrollments, and this chart looks at those undergraduate enrollments across the different levels of education. So the first grouping there is non-majors, intro for non-majors, then intro for majors, then mid-level courses, and upper-level courses. The graphs themselves show the rise from 2005, 10, and 15 in each of those categories, with the non-majors on the top and in pink and the majors in blue. And so you can see that there's been a surge in undergraduates overall, but there's been very rapid increases in these non-majors who are taking our courses. And whereas before they might just take a course, an intro course, now they are persisting into the upper level courses. And so we expect that to continue. And these are students who aren't necessarily interested in becoming software engineers or computer scientists, but they're interested in integrating very advanced computational skills into domain-specific knowledge that they have from the, their primary majors. So I think that's a very interesting group of students to pay attention to. And if you look at the next graph on the next slide, this just pulls out the non-majors. So you can see that the intro to non-majors course has had in those that 10 years a 47% rise in students, intro to majors 35%, mid-level 68%, and upper level 65%. So those are pretty significant changes in enrollment. And they're not very well served in many cases by the traditional CS curricular pathways. Yet, in a sense, they're where CS is moving. Computation is ubiquitous. It underlies much of the work across all STEM disciplines, and it's increasingly integral to the interdisciplinary efforts that are going to be needed to solve really complex problems. With that, as a side, I want to mention what Jim has already mentioned, too, that these non-majors that are attracted to CS now are much more diverse than our traditional students. They come from biology, chemistry, they come from marketing, they come from a bunch of other areas where the percentage of women is considerably higher, the percentage of underrepresented minorities as well. So this gives us a real opportunity to make our programs more inclusive so that we can recruit, welcome, and retain this much broader group of students and really help the computer science community as a whole to become more inclusive. There are many departmental responses that are already happening. Some departments are creating, or some universities are creating, interdisciplinary programs, for example, data science or AI. Some are elevating computing to a school or a college within the university. And others are creating the CS plus X or X plus CS, where X is a discipline, or it could be a set of disciplines, or it could be a grand challenge. So the idea is that the courses that students take in CS are more made more relevant to the study of X than it would be if they just took a standard computer science track. So this is really, I think, an important opportunity for us. And so this solicitation, the purpose of this solicitation is to reposition and re-envision computing in undergraduate education. And it's not the minor addition of a few computational elements, but it's really a holistic restructuring that we're looking for across interdisciplinary degree pathways. The goal of this solicitation is to facilitate this re-envisioning, helping universities to prepare a wider, more diverse range of students to collaboratively use computation across a range of different contexts and challenging problems. And with the CUE solicitation, we're really thinking of this as the beginning round. So you should think of these proposals almost as planning proposals for a much larger institution-wide effort. There are two requirements. The first one may seem a little strange. It's the 3 to 5 institutions. So we want these proposals to come from collaborations of 3 to 5 institutions of higher education working together and structured and functioning formally or maybe even informally as a networked improvement community or a NIC. And the second is that all proposals must have a BPC component. Let me say a little bit about NICs. They're design communities. They've been used a lot in very successful efforts on education reform, so there's a history to their use. In general, it's a set of partners or stakeholders that have share a common goal. They have a common understanding of how to reach that goal. They employ common metrics, and they meet to discuss their activities, their successes, their challenges, and their progress. They don't always have to do the same implementation, so they should be working on the same goal, the same overarching goal. They should have the kind of similar directions to what they're doing, but then the actual implementations depend on the university. And our hope is that by doing this partnering around a NIC instead of having each individual institution have their own award, that partners will be able to better address the issues across universities making for more robust solutions. In the past, we've funded a lot of things where we funded a university to do some reforms, but those reforms weren't widely adopted by other universities who thought they were too over-specialized to the particular characteristics of that one single university. So we're hoping to get around that with these communities. And the other common characteristic of NICs is that they engage in rapid research cycles of plan, do, study, act. And so in keeping with other NSF programs that are primarily research, we would like our education programs to also be research-oriented. We want to be able to learn what was successful, what wasn't successful, and what made things successful. And so to do that, you need a research component that's evaluating what's going on. So we'd also require that there be this research component. Our hope is that we can have the universities working together in these NICs and that then we'll be able to also provide a venue for the community of people who are awarded these NICs to also meet together at the kind of national level and to do the same thing, to really share data and share experiences and have this whole effort produce much more robust, scalable things that can be used in many different situations. So who would you want to have in your NIC? Well, you'd want faculty, certainly from the computer science department, computing departments, information science departments, but also from other different disciplines and departments. You would want this to be a restructuring across the university, and so all of the university departments, or many of them, should be involved. University administrators certainly should be involved. Education researchers who are going to be able to answer the questions generated by the participants based on the data that they've collected. and finally, evaluators who may evaluate any implementation. These grants that we're talking about right now, if you look at them, they're relatively small amounts of money for 18 months. So no, we're not expecting that universities will have completely reorganized at the end of that, but these are the beginnings. And so you may, in your NIC, not ever even get to an implementation stage. If you do, though, of course, you should have some evaluators to see how that's going. So we've already mentioned that these projects all have to have a broadening participation or BPC component. And what that looks like is you should provide demographic information about the student population served at each department in each of these institutions. So that would be the computer science departments. You should identify the relevant characteristics and needs of the participants from the underrepresented or underserved groups that you're addressing. You should have very specific plans for how you think you're going to address or accommodate those needs. Those plans can change as the project proceeds, but you should have some good ideas for strategies for doing that, and you should have some metrics for measuring success. There are a whole lot of resources out there for broadening participation. NSF has funded the BPC alliances that have been funded by SIDES for a number of years, and there's a link there in the slides that will take you to a page of those. All of those, or almost all of those alliances, have very good resources available there. NSF also funds a lot of INCLUDES projects, and you can look up some of those. They have a lot of resources. And finally, a new resource, which has just come online last week, is the bpcnet.org, which is a collaboration between the Computing Research Association, CRA, and NCWIT. And it was designed to help SIS PIs find resources and projects that they could do with broadening participation. One of the things that's on there is a white paper that was produced by a team of people who evaluated 650 BPC plans that were submitted to SIS last fall. And they evaluated them and then afterwards wrote a paper on what made a good BPC project and what characteristics you should be looking for. That white paper is prominently on the bpcnet.org site, and I would encourage you all to find it and to read it. It has a lot of appendices. The text is only 9 pages long, and it's a really good – sorry, I thought I had gotten rid of that interruption. At any rate, it's only 9 pages of text, the body of the text, and it's a really good read. So I'd encourage all of you to look at that. We also encourage the ethics component. Ethics component is really to acknowledge that there are many risks to technology that are becoming more and more important. There's the erosion of privacy, the lack of fairness. There's the lack of accountability in algorithmic decision making. There's the spread of misinformation. It's really incumbent on us as a community to better educate students in the ethics and the use of technology and how to guard against misuse. So we encourage the integration of ethics into the curriculum. In this project, we encourage it both within the CS curriculum and within special courses for ethics, and also within, this gives us the opportunity, this restructuring, to really look at ethics, how it impacts the specific disciplinary application areas. So I think this is a really interesting place to start thinking about ethics really holistically across an institution. It's also complementary to the Responsible CS Challenge that was announced a month or two ago, actually several months ago now, by Omidyar Network, Mozilla, Schmidt Foundation, and the Craig Newmark Philanthropy. So it's a timely component. Thinking to the solicitation details, the review criteria for these proposals is pretty much the same as the review criteria for all sorts of proposals. All NSF proposals have to address intellectual merit, so that's kind of the potential to advance knowledge. It has to address broader impacts, that's the potential to benefit society and contribute to the achievement of specific desired societal outcomes. And then finally, This solicitation has two additional criteria around broadening participation. The additional criteria on solicitations are really tricky to find. They are not in the front couple pages that most of you read. They're buried kind of in some of the later pages of the solicitation. So I'd encourage you to make sure to find them. There are two of them. First one says that the proposal must identify the characteristics and needs of the identified underrepresented or underserved groups to be addressed. You don't have to address all underserved or underrepresented groups, but the ones that are, you know, make the most sense in the context of your university. And the second criteria is, does the proposal include specific plans or strategies for addressing or accommodating the particular needs of the participants of the identified underrepresented groups? So these criteria, the intellectual merit, broader impacts, and the two BPC criteria will be specifically given to the panelists, the review panelists, and they will be asked to respond to each one or to evaluate how well the proposal responds to each one of those. So I'd encourage you to make sure to do that. The additional constraints, this has to be a multi-institutional partnership. We've had some questions from people saying, well, they're really not ready to do that. Can they just work within their institution? Or can they work within satellite institutions of the same main institution? But no, there must be 2 to 4 additional institutions of higher education partners for a total of 3 to 5. The budget for team members should also include money to attend 2 PI meetings. So we want to build a community of all the awards that are working on this problem, and we're going to do that at the national level. So we encourage you to have the funding available to send 2 people, to send several team members to 2 meetings. The next slide is the proposal size classes. There are 2 of them. The maximum budget of $300K for up to 18 months. You can see that that's really not enough to complete this whole project, and we do at NSF anticipate having follow-on solicitations and funding available to continue these projects, subject to budget and all sorts of other issues, but that is an expectation. And with the with an ethics component, you can go up to $350K. So you get an extra $50K to work on that aspect. Our expectation is that we'll make 12 to 15 of these awards in FY19. As you can see, the solicitations go really late in the year, so these awards will be made next summer, so a pretty short time frame. The total program funding is $4.5 million, and of course the estimated program budget, number of awards, average award size, duration are all subject to availability of funds. I have here some contacts for further information. There are 3 Cognizant program officers, me and Faye Cobb-Payton and Stephanie August. So Faye is a member of the SIZE Directorate, and Stephanie is representing the EHR Directorate there. So their contact information is listed. You're welcome to call any of us with questions. We will be putting out a series of FAQs with common questions that we get. So this is your chance to ask some questions now that could be repeated in the FAQs or to send questions. There are also some things for further information. Tomorrow afternoon, we're going to try a new way of talking about solicitations. We're going to do a Twitter chat from the SIZE feed. So you're welcome to join that tomorrow and ask questions. That's at 2 p.m. tomorrow. And the transcript, audio, and presentation will be posted at the link there after the webinar is concluded. It will take us a little time to get that up, but that should be relatively soon. So at this time, I'd like to open the discussion up to questions from the audience.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star then 1. Please unmute your phone and record the name at the prompt. If at any time your question has been answered, you can remove yourself by pressing star 2. Once again, for questions over the phone, please press star then 1 at this time. I'm We do have some responses from the phone. Our first one is from Mr. Magdi. Your line is open.
Yes. So I have a question regarding the team members and the lead. So obviously the team is interdisciplinary and multiple institution. Can the lead PI be outside computer science, like a geography department want to integrate computer science education, for example? This is the first question. The second question is about research scientists in professional associations. Can these scientists be part of the team? They have connections with multiple institutions, and including them is very helpful to build up the team. So can be also they be part of the co-PIs or PIs? Thank you.
I would say yes to both of those things. There's no restriction on the PI having to come from computer science. The focus of the solicitation, though, really is to get computer science spread across universities. So I would, computer scientists would have to be involved, but they wouldn't necessarily have to be the PI. And certainly research scientists can be involved as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Shannon French. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm an ethicist, so I'm delighted with the strong ethics component in this, of course. My question, apologies if I imagine many people already know the answer to this, but I personally don't. What about international participation? A lot of what we do involves scholars from other countries. I don't know what restrictions there are on that, and I'd be grateful for any insight.
Well, I think that the goal of this solicitation is really to dramatically change universities that are U.S. institutions. So I think that I would expect that most of the participants would be from those U.S. institutions. Can you tell me more about what kinds of international participation you'd expect?
I think I was thinking just in terms of consultants, for example. The field that I work in is relatively small, and some of the best experts are not in the U.S. In terms of ethics and AI. So I was just interested in whether they could be brought in on the project or if it should all be U.S.-based, which is also doable. I'm just wondering about the parameters.
Well, we can talk offline about specific things. I'd be happy to answer questions about that. In general, I would say they could certainly come and give advice and be part of it that way. I think they probably could not be a PI or a co-PI.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's very helpful.
The next question comes from Gregory Hislop. Your line is open. Mr. Hislop, you may need to check your mute button on your phone.
Okay, let's try that again. Jan, I had a question about composition of the teams in terms of the types of institutions. And what caught me thinking about this was the blog post on CRA. There's a line in there that says that the teams should be teams of like colleges and universities. And that kind of caught my attention, made me wonder, what did that mean? And I noticed in the introductory remarks, Jim said like-minded universities and colleges, which I'm more comfortable with. In the group that I'm working with, we actually have some history of working together. We value diversity of institutional type within the team. And I just want to make sure, specifically based on that comment in the CRA blog post, that you're not looking for some kind of homogeneity across the types of institutions in a team.
No, I would say, though, they should be both like and like-minded. but I would define like as having some common characteristic. It could be regional. Could be a, you know, two-year school and a four-year school that have, you know, articulation agreements. It could be that they are like institutions in terms of being, you know, R1 institutions, or like institutions in terms of, you know, being all of the institutions in some state system or something like that. So there should be some common characteristic, I would think, for them to want to address this problem in the same way. But we didn't define what we meant by like, because we would like you to figure out how to work with, you know, what institutions would make the most sense for you to work with. So you should think of like as being a very broad set of characteristics, and you get to pick what they are.
Okay, thanks.
The next question comes from Vasanta Chiganti. Your line is open.
Hi. I also had a similar question about composition of teams, and I think you've already answered my question, so thank you.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Michael Robinson. Your line is open.
Yes, my question is about the evaluators. Do they have to be off campus, or can they be from another department on campus?
I couldn't understand that. Audio.
Okay.
Is very
can you hear me?
Could you repeat that?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Not much.
Okay. I got it turned up to high as I can go. Okay. It's about the evaluators. Can they be on campus, or do they have to be off campus, or do they have to be someone that you all are familiar with?
Oh, you're asking about whether the evaluators have to be in the same department or the same university?
Yeah, my question is, the evaluators, can they be from a different department on campus or the same department that you define, or do they have to be off campus, a consultant or someone that you all are familiar with?
So we haven't really specified that. In general, evaluators are supposed to be independent, so you know, they could be from a different department in the same university, but for these awards, they're very short, you know, 18-month awards, so I think there could be some flexibility about that. But in general, you should be having someone who is capable of looking at this with relatively independent eyes. They don't have to be from outside your institution. They could be within your institution or within one of the participating institutions, and they don't have to be, they could be, you should probably be outside your one of the main departments, but since this is an institutional transformation, you know, there's going to be some overlap there too.
Okay, thanks.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star then one, and please record your name after the prompt. The next question is from Jin Lee. Your line is open.
Hi, I have two questions. The first question is about the budget. Is the $300K, $350K is for all the institutions in the partnership? The second question,
yeah.
Is that a yes?
Yes. So all the institutions in the partnership share that same budget.
Okay. The second question is regarding the duration of the project. So given the nature of the changes, a lot of them need to have approvals from different, school levels and so on. So that really gives very little time to implement whatever, proposed. So these
grants, you should really think of them as kind of a planning exercise, right? It's impossible that you'll take a group of institutions and have them completely restructure their whole approach to computing in 15 months. So really what these are is to just start the beginning of that conversation.
In that sense, the evaluator and also the education researcher's role, going to be very, at the very end, last semester, say, maybe last 6 months, I would imagine it's going to be limited somehow.
Well, I think that the researcher could help with the kinds of figuring out the kinds of data that the NIC is going to collect and the kinds of questions that are going to be asked without actually doing that, right? Just setting up a research design that would work. So that would be the main role of the researcher. If you want to run some pilots, then clearly you need an evaluator for those pilots, but pilots aren't essential either. So I think really a lot of the money can be spent on setting up the collaborations, on convening, bringing people together, especially if you're at a university that are geographically not close to each other, paying for travel. So there could be a variety of things that you need money for to do even these initial stages, but it's not expected that you know, you might want to hire someone whose part of their job is to coordinate the communication across the NIC. But it's not expected that you're going to finish a project with this small amount of money and this small amount of time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Karai Kolena. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question is related, thinking that this is, I'm seeing this as a planning grant, and you mentioned that we should think as if they were bigger centers. So I'm trying to compare with the ERCs and then the planning grants that were given for ERCs. So in that respect, are you expecting a full proposal with 15 pages, or are you expecting a smaller proposal with a more general budget?
Oh, I would expect probably a full proposal. Yeah. I mean, I think most people will respond to this with a full proposal, so I think that that you should, but the proposal itself should be setting up, you know, it could have set up some of the institutions involved. You might want to look, you know, part of your activities might be finding more institutions, but you should be, you should have a proposal that's, you know, pretty well thought out, probably takes the whole 15 pages.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from Filippi Peroni. Your line is open.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One is whether you're planning on doing any kind of matchmaking for institutions that are interested and not immediately able to find partners. And second is what are the deliverables that the institutions are supposed to be turning in other than data and plans?
You mean turning in at the end of the 18 months or turning in with...
At the end of the 18 months, 18 yes.
Months. Well, at the end of the 18 months, it would be great if you had a functioning NIC where people were kind of on board and knew how to move on to the next phase, which would really involve doing implementations, but staying in touch in terms of collecting data and answering questions and coming up with questions that make sense across the institution. So, you know, imagine that there were where there was a solicitation for that, and at the end of this point, you should be ready to move on to that phase. That makes
okay.
sense?
Yes, and with regards to helping institutions find each other for collaboration?
That's probably not something that NSF can do.
Okay.
I'd be willing to talk to you and think about offline and think about whether there are ways that we could do that, but I don't know in general how we would do that.
All right. Thank you.
The next question comes from Colleen Doney. Your line is open.
Hi. A lot of the questions that I had have been answered, but I have one more. Is one of the end goals of these NICs to grow or to just stay the same size, like 3 to 5 institutions?
Well, I think if you had 3 to 5 institutions that were really completely changing and rethinking the way they were have done computing, that would probably be sufficient. If you grew, that would probably be fine too. So I think that's really would depend on the context. You know, if you had an institution that wanted to join that seemed like it would fit right in and contribute, then that would be great. But, you know, I picked the 3 to 5 as kind of, enough to get started, but not so much to be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The next question comes from Aaron Ellison. Your line is open.
Hi.
Can I just say something to that last answer? I think because the solicitation says 3 to 5, you should start with 3 to 5 and then maybe grow to something later if you want. Okay. Now I'm ready for the next question.
Thanks. Can you hear me okay?
Uh-huh.
I guess I have two questions, an easy one and a deliverables one. The easy one is for the multiple institutions, should we do this as subawards from the lead or as collaboratives from the individual institutions, or is that up to the institutions?
That's up to the institution. As you probably know, there are advantages and disadvantages in both
right.
approaches. You know, my personal preference for this would probably be to do it as one organization that does sub-awards so that there's some one organization that's kind of in charge of the communication, maintaining the communication between all of the pieces. Sometimes that doesn't happen as well in collaboratives where people go off kind of and do their own thing. But if you can avoid that, it doesn't matter which way you turn it in, whichever makes more sense in your environment.
Thanks. I guess I wanted to follow up on the deliverables. You gave a very clear sense of the deliverable for a functioning NIC. Do you have a sense of a deliverable for the broadening participation in computing component?
Yeah, I think that what you should have at the end of this is a pretty strong idea of the landscape at your institutions, of what the issues are in broadening participation. You maybe have some strategies for how to address that. You've maybe even looked at starting some of those strategies. Maybe one of your strategies is recruiting, and you know that early in the 18 months, and so you come up with some ideas about how to do recruiting, and you actually try them out. So, again, you should be moving, in the direction of being ready to really roll something out. And broadening participation might be a good place to run some pilots of some ideas if you have.
Great. Thank you very much.
And once again, if you do have questions you would like to ask over the phone, please press star then one at this time. The next question is from Dev Rashta. Your line is open.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
My question is, first question is, what should be the timeline we propose, like starting next January of 2020, or it would be fall of 2019? And second question is, can you, teaching for a science student is going to be a little different than for engineering. So it's not going to be one curriculum fits all. So towards the end of this project, what do you envision us to come up with, like 10 different curriculums or 10 different
The first question I can answer easily, the timeline is we are going to make the awards in FY19, which ends October 1st, ends September 30th, actually. So the awards will all be out by then. So your timeline should start in the fall. And certainly, even if they're made in September, you already know that you're probably getting one. So you could start your timeline at the beginning of the fall semester. And then your second question, could you repeat that? I didn't quite hear that.
My second question is, this STEM is a broad field, and the curriculum for, let's say, a biology student is going to be different than biological engineering students. Their computational knowledge is very different. So do you envision to have maybe 10 different curriculums for 10 different STEM fields, or like just to identify the problems and towards the end of this project, what do you envision for this partnership to come up with?
I think that that's one of the central problems in how to do this. And so that's one of the problems that you should be coming up with a solution for. The idea that, a biologist may need a different brand of computer science than a chemist, and how do you educate both of them? And maybe you don't educate them all in the computer science department. Maybe there are courses that are taught in biology and chemistry that cover the necessary computer science or tailor some of the necessary computer science. So I think that how you get the appropriate computer science to the appropriate student is actually part of the challenge of this work. And so that should be, you should have ideas about how to do that at the end of this 18 months, not necessarily at the beginning.
All right. Thank you so much.
And that was our final question at this time. But once again, if you have a question you would like to ask over the phone, please press star then one. Please stand by for any further questions.
Let me introduce Allison, who's one of Allison Kennedy, one of our fellows. and she has some questions and answers that have been asked and answered before. So she'll give you a couple of those.
Hi, everyone. So one of the first questions that we've gotten from some folks in the community is, can PIs augment the Carnegie Foundation Network Improvement Community Framework based on their own context? And are other NIC frameworks acceptable for this work? And so the answer to that is projects can structure their collaboration in many different ways depending on their own context and needs, but in general, they should adhere to the principles of a NIC set out by the Carnegie Foundation. So collaborating institutions and stakeholders should agree on a common goal, metrics, and data, and they should be intentionally structured to promote frequent communication amongst the stakeholders to discuss different approaches. And this can differ across different partnering institutions. Additional information on NICs, I think Jan mentioned this, is there's a lot of resources on the CarnegieFoundation.org. They have several blog posts that are a good place to start. Do we have any questions based on that information?
We do have three more responses on the phone if you would like to take them.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Rachel Schwartz, your line is open.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so you've talked a bit about, you've talked quite a bit about computer science in the discipline, but there's somewhat of a difference between computing in a discipline, you know, X plus computing and X plus computer science. So in biology, there's, you know, a lot of computing in biology, but I don't necessarily see it as computer science. Does it need to be computer science, or are we looking at computing more broadly?
We're looking at computing more broadly. So we're not talking about using the computer as a calculator in your classes. You know, we're talking about significant computation that is used as a, you know, kind of underlying, enabling technology in different disciplines like modeling and simulation or AI. You know, we're talking about significant computation and moving that in across disciplines in reasonable ways. So, yeah, I tend to use the term computer science, but think of that as computing more broadly, but significant computing more broadly.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Iyad. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Do you hear me okay, I suppose?
Yeah.
Okay. So my question has to do with, do you expect that universities that get these grants would be developing new courses? You know, how would they really interact with undergraduate students? I'm sure there's a lot of great, exciting ways that we can interact with undergraduates under this program, but there's no time to develop a new course or anything like that. So, for example, would it be possible to pay them for participating in a special seminar or, you know, research program or anything like that? Or I don't know how you would get them involved really quickly.
Well, I'm not sure that you need to necessarily get them involved really quickly. I think that ultimately if you're going to restructure computing education across the whole university, you're going to need to introduce new curricula and new pathways, but that doesn't have to be done in the first 18 months. If you want students to be involved in different ways at the beginning and you want to give them stipends, I would think that would be okay. You know, we always negotiate budgets at the end anyway.
Right.
So I would think that that would be okay. You know, you could think of what you need to position yourself in 18 months to go forward with a, you know, with a dramatic plan.
I understand. Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star then one. Our next question is from Razid. Your line is open.
Hi there. My question is more in line with the previous one. So at Missouri State University, we took an initiative to come up with something called course-based undergraduate research involving computer science and other STEM fields. So since we are already working on it, so my question was, in the budget for this program especially, can we have provisions to pay the undergraduate students by means of, let's say, a scholarship or at least reimburse their tuition fee for the course we are planning. I mean, as a pilot study, we are planning to offer a course involving students from all the STEM fields and encouraging them in computing. So I was wondering, can we at least put some budget money there to reimburse the tuition fee for that specific course?
Yeah, you know, you're going to have to make the case that this is necessary to kind of carry out the larger effort, right? So this first, the money that you spend, we haven't really put many criteria on the money that you spend in the 18 months, because I think that will depend on the context. If you think that ironing out this particular course is a real step forward, then I think it's reasonable to do that. But it shouldn't be the goal of your proposal to have this one course. The goal should go way beyond that. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Jennifer Speed. Your line is open.
I think this is the first year of the program, and you mentioned that there would be follow-up funding probably to implement the plans that were developed. However, are there plans to renew this kind of planning grant type of funding?
Well, we can't really guarantee anything in the future, right?
Right.
We don't know our funding levels and various other priorities shifting around. So it's our expectation that there will be follow-on money for this. And I would think that as part of any new solicitation, we would look at what we got with this solicitation and perhaps change it. So, you know, first solicitations almost always get revised in various ways based on what we see. So I would expect that there will be other Q kind of solicitations going forward, but I don't know what they will look like at this point.
Thank you.
I can't even promise that there will be, but we're hoping there will.
At this time, we have no further questions.
Okay, we'll do one more and then we'll call it a day. Allison has one more.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about these CS plus X models. So for institutions that have not pursued that type of approach, does it make more sense for them to first implement that within their own institution before trying to enter into a network improvement community with other institutions? And so the answer to that is kind of two parts. The first is that there is no requirement to create a CS plus X or X plus CS pathways. That is just one example of a way that you could do it. Partners should think broadly about restructuring degree pathways within the context of their own institution. And then the second part is that the solicitation does not support individual institutions working in isolation. Instead, it supports teams of institutions working together who share common experiences and progress. And we expect that this type of collaboration will result in a far more robust set of solutions that will be able to be replicated across a range of different types of institutions.
Okay, I think that's a good place to end. So thank you all for your participation, and all of the program officers listed there will be available for questions should you have questions. The best way to get in touch with any of us is through email, and we're happy to hear from you. I really appreciate your being involved in this. If you have other questions that will help us in creating a good FAQ set of questions, that would be helpful. So please feel free to get in touch. Thanks.
Thank you for your participation on today's conference call. At this time, all parties may disconnect.